Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Paridaja Acharya Astatera Sita Sushimad Hinta Vangres Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada ki jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. Iskan Divi Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Nam Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. Srila Bhagavan Sri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nityananda Shraddhaita Gadadha Shvashadi Gaur Bhakta Vrindaki Jaya Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jaya Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jaya Sri Mayapur Nabatitham Ki Jaya Runga Mai Ki Jaya Jivana Mai Ki Jaya Bhukti Devi Ki Jaya Kursi Devi Ki Jaya Shamavira Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jaya Kai Gopremanandi. All glories to the Assembly. All glories to the Assembly. All glories to the Assembly. All glories to Sri Guru and Guru. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namaste Sharasati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Vishesa Sanyavari Pachata Vasacharine. Can you sit so your back, like, your back's not to the deity? Like, maybe like, it's just the way they have the seat here. So, yeah. Not, you kind of have to manipulate yourself. Jnana-tmiranda-sya-jnana-jana-shulakaya Chakshuron-militam-jena-tasmai-sri-gurave-namaha Chichaitanam-hanobhishtam-stapitam-jena-bhutare Shayam-rupakadamayam-dharati-sabhatam-jitam Mukam-kuruti-vachalam-phangulangayate-gire-yakpahatamaham-bande-sri-guru-dinatharinam Pancha kalpa taru vyascha Kupashandu vyaye vacha Putitanam pavane vyo Vaishnavi vyo namo namaha Sri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nityananda Shraddhaita Gadadhar Shiva Shri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Sisi Gaur Nitai Ki Jai, Sisi Radha Shyam Sundar ki jai, Shri Krishna Balaram ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Jai Gopal Premanandi Hari Hari Bhakti. One year, probably 1974, GBC passed a resolution that no women, single women with children, would be allowed to live in temples. At that time, the temples were providing for them. So what the GBC would do was they would read the resolutions of Prabhupada and they wanted to get his okay. So they'd read the resolution and give a nod or make a sound. Then they read this resolution that single women with children could not live in the temple. And then Prabhupada just said, and he closed his eyes. And that was a different sound than he was making for the other resolution. So they had understood that he didn't like that resolution. So I believe it was Satsrup Maharshi. He said, so Prabhupada will strike that resolution. Prabhupada didn't say anything, but he could just tell. Because of just that one sound. So, we strike that resolution. And Prabhupada was sitting there, and he was not saying anything. And then he said, I just want to give everyone a chance to be Krishna conscious. That was his response. I just want to give everyone a chance to be Krishna conscious. So the way I took the story was that it hurt Prabhupada that we couldn't give everyone facility to be Krishna conscious. It was painful for him. If in any way we would discriminate or prevent or do anything that would make it difficult or cumbersome on someone to be Krishna conscious, it hurt Prabhupada. His whole mission, Prabhupada's whole mission, his whole reason for giving up his family and coming here was to give every single person the chance to become Krishna conscious. So there was a lot of talk at one time in ISKCON about mission statement. You need a mission statement. You need a vision statement. What's your mission statement? What's the mission statement of your temple? What's the mission statement of your department? What's the mission statement of your product? What's your life mission? And so people were coming up with different mission statements for their lives, for their projects. But then I thought, I wonder what Prabhupada's mission statement is. Does he have one? Is it written anywhere? So I thought, let me go to Prabhupada's letters pre-ISKCON and see, maybe there's something there. I'm going through the letters. And I think it was about 1954, Prabhupada was writing someone, and unfortunately I can't remember who, a friend or maybe a political leader. And he revealed his mission indirectly. You have to be looking, when you read this, you'd have to be looking at to think what's his mission, because otherwise it may pass you by. You wouldn't really notice it. But Prabhupada said, my desire is I want to make every living entity Krishna conscious. And then I said, oh, okay. We got the mission. This is Prabhupada's mission, to make everyone Krishna conscious. And one of the things we noticed about Prabhupada is that anytime there is any interference to making people Krishna conscious, it was very upsetting to him, because it hurt him if in any way he couldn't give someone Krishna consciousness. Or it hurt him to see that people were being cheated. And a lot of times we saw this, and how upset Prabhupada was when he saw how people were being cheated by whoever was cheating them, whether it was the media, whether it was advertising, social influences, science, academia. It was really upset, really upset. I was in Los Angeles when Prabhupada made that statement that kind of shook us. Kind of like, sometimes Prabhupada would say things, kind of like an earthquake. That time Prabhupada said, the scientists are the greatest enemies of modern civilization. It was like an earthquake just went through the room. And Yogeshwar Prabhu wrote an article, it's quite interesting, in which he was explaining how Prabhupada could say things which seemed racist or sexist. But when Prabhupada said those things, he wasn't saying anything about how he felt about those people. He was just stating a truth about a certain person or a certain class of people, in some cases. So he was making a statement about scientists. Obviously, not every scientist is the greatest demon. Not every scientist is an atheist. But he was making a statement about those scientists who were propagating theories that would basically kill Krishna forever, at least in the minds of people, through so-called scientific knowledge. So he was really upset when he said it. And we could feel why he was upset. It's just like if you send your son or daughter to school and someone comes and robs their room, takes everything, all their money, their computer, this and that, you'll be upset, naturally. This is unjust. So in the same way, I got the sense that Prabhupada was feeling like every living entity is Krishna's son and daughter, and it's unjust and illegal, a travesty, when people are given a position of power that are turning people away from Krishna, turning them into atheism. It hurt him. It upset him. But it wasn't saying anything about how he felt about those people personally. It wasn't that he hated them personally. He didn't like them. But it hurt him because it was hurting innocent people. And whenever, anytime innocent people were misled, it really hurt him. There was another incident in which you could see how Prabhupada was hurt to see how people were being, how should we say, misled. So Prabhupada was on a morning walk, and it was, you know, as Prabhupada went out in the morning, about 6 o'clock he would go out, come back at 7, greet the deities. This was in Australia. I don't know what city. But what was happening is that parking was very expensive downtown, so people would drive in early and park a little bit outside of downtown. So they come early so they could get a space, like in the neighborhood. And so they park their car, then they'd have to get in. It'd be like a mile or so from downtown, and take a bus or something, or walk or whatever. So Prabhupada was walking, and he was noticing all these cars. And he was asking the devotees, he says, it's so early in the morning, what are all these people doing? Where are they going? And then they explained to Prabhupada, they're going to work. But they're coming early because it's expensive to park downtown. They're coming early so they can get a space. And then Prabhupada said with great emotion, they're working so hard. And then Shruti Kirti said that when he looked at Prabhupada, he could see there were tears coming out of Prabhupada's eyes, that it upset him so much to see how people had to work so hard to maintain themselves, that he felt that deeply. And so as I was thinking about this, and just thinking in general about how what Prabhupada was doing, And you could see that for Prabhupada there was nothing that he would consider an austerity or an inconvenience or nothing he wouldn't do if that was going to help people. Or we could say if that would prevent other people from misleading people. So there's another story. This happened in Mexico and it was late in the evening and they were trying to get on a television show, one of the biggest, if not the biggest. And it was like 9:30, they got the news that they could do the show. The show, I think, started at midnight. So now it's, you know, Prabhupada had been out preaching all day and he hadn't even eaten. Or hadn't eaten lunch, I don't think. And now they're coming to Prabhupada and say, we just have this news that this TV show has opened up. But it's going to take us like an hour or so to get there, and they want us to get a little early, so we're going to have to leave soon, and we won't get back till like 2 a.m. So, Devotee was really, really, he was caught in the middle of like 2 million people hearing Prabhupada and having to put Prabhupada through this austerity. And so he explained everything to Prabhupada, and then he said, but Prabhupada, I don't want to put you through this inconvenience. I don't want you to feel like you have to do this. And Prabhupada said, if I were to think about my convenience, I wouldn't be able to preach. And then Prabhupada said, and they said, but Prabhupada will come back late. You haven't eaten and we'll come back late. And Prabhupada said, it's okay. We can sleep later. We can eat later. So there's so many stories like this where you just see that it hurt him so much that people didn't have Krishna consciousness. He felt he was like so sensitive to the suffering of other people that he was willing to do whatever he had to do. And I mean, look at Prabhupada at the end of his life. Whenever I see that video of Prabhupada translating, I've seen it so many times. Every time I see it, I think, this doesn't make sense. Like it's only going to be a few more pages, and then he's going to leave his body. Why is he pushing himself? And you can't stop Prabhupada. You can't stop a person who wants to save the world. You can't stop a person who has that level of compassion, that even at the last moment, that's just what he does. That's his nature. He has to help people. So, in reflecting on this, that I'm trying to dissect a little bit into how we could understand compassion more. Krishna says, by your own experience of suffering in this world, you feel other suffering. And I believe it was Jiva Goswami or Vishnu Thakurati Thakur said that if the devotee says, Krishna, show mercy to this person, Krishna will show it. And because the devotee is embodied, the devotee is in his physical form, so he knows what suffering is, so he can empathize with people because he knows what their suffering is. And then he said, Krishna can't do that. He doesn't have a physical body. He can't empathize that way. But the devotee can. So then the devotee says, Krishna, show mercy. And Krishna says, okay, I will show mercy like that. So the devotee feels suffering from his own experience, and he's received the mercy of Krishna, so he feels like, okay, I have to help people, they're suffering. And the more the devotee feels that, I don't want to see people suffer, the more he becomes powered with that same energy of compassion. Karuna Shakti, Vigrahaya and Vishnudeva, the Karuna Shakti. And I think Prabhupada, although in his prana mantra we don't have that Karuna Shakti, but I think it's obvious that he embodied it. Then when Prabhupada went to New York, we all know what happened. And the news of what Prabhupada was doing was going back to India, either through Prabhupada or through his disciples. So his godbrothers knew the details. Prabhupada's there, there's a bunch of hippies, this and that. And so that was explained to Sridhar Maharaj. And he said something quite amazing about Prabhupada's compassion. He said, Prabhupada was, this is, what Prabhupada did is proof he's Shaktivesh avatar. So Shaktivesh, Avesh means empowered, and Shakti means, or Shakti or energy. But then he asked the question, well, he's empowered, but whose Shakti is it that's empowering him? And he said, it must be Nityananda, because then he said something amazing. He said, it had to be Nityananda Shakti, because if Nityananda Prabhu personally came to New York in 1965, he would have not done anything other than Prabhupada did, because Nityananda worked through Prabhupada. He said the same thing. Nityananda was there. It was his Shakti. And then he said, Prabhupada had no personal interest, and therefore he was completely transparent, and he was the perfect vehicle for Nityananda Shakti to work through. And just as Nityananda, his Shakti is to go to the lowest, then that's what Prabhupada did. Now, Sridhar Maharaj also told something interesting. You may have heard this. The order to come to America, sometimes we think, or we hear, that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta predicted Prabhupada would come. And so it kind of makes it sound like he will do, like, they wanted to engage Prabhupada in Gaudiya Math, and Bhaktisiddhanta said, no, he will do. Don't bother him. He will do in the course of time. So, and we hear that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta told Prabhupada personally, preach in English. So it sounds like he was the only one given that instruction, but that's not true. It was given to everybody. And Sridhar Maharaj tells an interesting story which indirectly glorifies Prabhupada. Or maybe directly glorifies Prabhupada. He said that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta asked him to go to the West and preach. And he said, I can't mix with those people. I wouldn't be able to do it. I think we have to consider that even though it seemed like Prabhupada did it well, it wasn't easy. And that we hear that Prabhupada used to go to the docks, Hare Krishna. And Garga Muni tells a story. I don't know if any of you heard this. It's an interesting story. He swears by the story. And he said that Brahmananda put this story in his book. He said they were having a conversation in the garden in 1970. There was a lot of trouble in ISKCON. And there was some influence from some of his godbrothers that was, Prabhupada felt, was undermining ISKCON. And they're having a conversation, and Prabhupada said, I quit. And Brahmananda fainted, and Prabhupada had to get up and slap him. And another devotee was there, and he started crying. But then Garga Muni said that later Prabhupada said, I never said that. But Garga Muni said, no, he said that. And Brahmananda put it in his book. If he put it in his book, then, I don't know, some transcendental leela. But my point is that we should never think that these things were easy for Prabhupada. And that unless a person had this deep level of compassion, he couldn't possibly do this. Yesterday, my godbrother called me up. And I answer the phone. The first thing he says is, did you go to Hawaii? And I said, I didn't say I was going to Hawaii. He said, no. Did you go to Hawaii in 1975? I said, what are you talking about? And he reads me a conversation where Guru Kripa is telling Prabhupada that I'm going to call Mahatma to come to Hawaii to be the temple president. And he said, you didn't know that? And I said, I have no idea. So he's telling me the situation. It's Sudama, who was the president then, had some relationship, I think, some problem. And Guru Kripa was the GVC, so he's talking to Prabhupada, and he's saying, can Mahatma do this? And at that time, I was just a brahmachari in L.A. doing book distribution, something like that. And so we began talking about what was going on. So he was saying in the conversation, you could tell what was going on. Saddam had left, there's no president, this, that, and the next thing. And then we started talking about all the problems that Prabhupada had to face that were like this, like disasters of leaders falling down or stealing or this or that, just like. And I said, someone should write a book of all these things so we can fully appreciate what Prabhupada was doing, because he was going through all this all the time. And I don't know if I told you the story before, but one time Kaushalya came to Prabhupada and she was so frustrated, she said, I quit. And Prabhupada said, no, none of you have a right to quit, but if anyone has a right to quit, it's me. Because I have gone through so many difficulties. She said, you can't imagine the difficulties I've gone through. And my conclusion is, it's you see Prabhupada like, I quit, I can't do this. If anyone has a right to quit, I quit. Checking out the boat schedule, all these things. You know, the human emotion of how hard this is. And how difficult it must have been to work with us. I mean, we know we're difficult people. So, and so my conclusion was that Prabhupada's compassion was a driving force that just, it just, he couldn't leave us. He couldn't stand to see us suffer. He couldn't stand to see anybody suffer. And that was that energy that he had. And then the other thing we saw, which was so amazing, those of us who were there at the time, and maybe even after, somebody joins ISKCON. So he says, I want to be a devotee. You go, okay, come upstairs, get out the buzzer, put on the dhoti kurta, the whole thing. And then next morning after breakfast, Sankirtan, what's that? Come on out, we'll show you. And we start talking about what Prabhupada's desire is for spreading Krishna consciousness, saving the fallen souls, etc., etc. We start telling them that. Then there is this person who's just joined ISKCON, who's on the street all day, every day, for like the next 5 years, completely devoting himself to save the fallen souls, giving classes about saving the fallen souls, going and doing it. How? What's going on here? That person may have never even thought about anyone but himself in his whole life. It's possible, isn't it? And now they're, let's save the fallen souls. You've seen that so many times. And you look at that and think, what happened? How did that transformation happen? According to my understanding and experience, Prabhupada's compassion was so intense, it just flooded his disciples. And therefore his disciples would do the same austerities. They would push themselves in the same way because that compassion was so intense, it was flowing through them. You know, any of us who joined early in ISKCON, who did book distribution, must have spent months living in a van or a hotel full of roaches and other interesting insects. Yeah? Hare Krishna, yes? Yeah. Must have done that. And you could look from a distance and say, why would they do that? What's going on? Prabhupada's compassion. It wasn't, and nobody was complaining. It was like, it's just what you do because you're supposed to be compassionate. That's what bhakti is all about. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Jiva Dharma said bhakti is made of three ingredients, and one of them is compassion. So it's like, you know, you have to have compassion to make up bhakti. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, well, when you have bhava, that emotion of love that you have for Krishna, simultaneously it becomes the emotion of compassion. It's like depends where you're, what direction you're looking. So that emotion of bhava, when you look towards Krishna, is called bhava. And when you look towards the living entities, it's called daya. It's the same emotion. So when you hit the stage of bhava, automatically, if you glance toward the living entity, that same emotion of love for Krishna becomes dhyā towards the living entity. Like it comes together. Like we say, you know, if you're envious of God, you're envious of everyone. If you love God, you love everyone. So, I think we were infested to some degree by Prabhupada's compassion. And and Prabhupada made it clear to us that there's so many spiritualists who are very austere, apparently very dedicated to their sadhana, who are completely selfish, who are just thinking about their liberation. That's all they're thinking about. Or thinking about their bliss, their happiness, their intellectualism. And so Prabhupada made it clear that the outstanding difference and the outstanding quality of the Vaishnava is that they actually care about people. And then there's this story. I may have told this story before. This is an amazing story. I have to admit, I'm an addict of Prabhupada's memories. I've probably watched them all like three times or something. I tell all my disciples, I go, you have to watch these videos because you won't understand Prabhupada completely by reading his books. Actually, by reading his books, a lot of times you misunderstand the personality behind it. And you get this idea, he's tough and he's not human and he's overly strict and uncompromising. That's part of it. But when you hear the videos, you learn so many other things that come out unexpected. And this was a very unexpected conversation that our godbrother Dinanath told. He said that when he was in India in 1970-71, he wanted to remain brahmachari. So he decided to remain brahmachari, I will go to Rishikesh. And I'll just live in an ashram in Rishikesh and I'll remain brahmachari. So that was his plan. He thought it was a good plan. Dinanath. You know Dinanath? Black devotee? Kirtaniya. Dinanath. So he went to Prabhupada. Prabhupada was so upset. He said, please, don't do that. And he said something which could be misunderstood. I don't think any of you had misunderstood it, but it could be misunderstood. He said, please don't do that. I wasted so much time staying in Vrindavan. In other words, I should have gone out. I should have just been out in the world. I shouldn't have stayed here. I should have been out. And he begged him, please don't do that. So, then another story. This is a funny story, but it shows where Prabhupada's heart is. So, 73. They're building the Vrindavan temple, and I don't know exactly why, but the government's restricting cement. I guess the government needs cement for their projects, and so you have to jump through many hoops to get cement, and of course build the temple, you need a certain amount of cement, and that was a problem. They weren't getting cement so easily. So Prabhupada's with his devotees. They're driving to Vrindavan. He's done it. You know. The devotees are thinking Prabhupada's going to show us Vrindavan, take us to Vrindavan. And they're thinking, on the way to Vrindavan, it's going to be amazing, because Prabhupada's going to be telling us all about Vrindavan, all about the Leelas and so forth. So they're driving, they're waiting. Prabhupada's silent, doesn't say anything. Driving, waiting. 1 hour, doesn't say anything. Finally, the Mahavakya comes. He finally says something. Cement. That's what came out of Prabhupada's mind. The whole way there, he's thinking, cement. So, cement means temple. Temple means mercy for people. So Prabhupada is just thinking, how we can spread Krishna consciousness. I had the fortune, 71, I believe. Where at Rathiatra, I was temple president in Vancouver. Where at Rathiatra, I get a tap on the shoulder. It says, tonight there's a temple president's meeting in Berkeley with Prabhupada in his room. So the whole day I'm thinking, what's this going to be about? This is exciting. You know, what's Prabhupada going to tell us? You know? Some strategic plan, some formula, some this or that. I was like, the whole day I was wondering. And it was almost like after the meeting ended, I was thinking, so when's the meeting going to start? Because the whole meeting of all the presidents and sannyasis, Prabhupada just talked about preaching, how we have to preach more, how we go out, open more temples, make more devotees, distribute more books. That was the whole temple president's meeting. So again, it was a manifestation of Prabhupada's mind thinking 24/7, how can I help the conditioned souls? And then I want to tell one last story, which I was meditating on this morning, and then we can have some discussion. This is something that maybe we take for granted. But because Prabhupada's mission was to write books and distribute books, and his mission wasn't to open temples, but because people were coming, he needed temples for them. And so, because there were so many people and so many temples, there were so many headaches and so many things to do that Prabhupada wasn't finding time to write his books. The books that are going to save us and save others, which was Prabhupada's main service, and which was the main way Prabhupada felt that Krishna consciousness was going to spread. So this is what's on Prabhupada's mind. This is his seva, and he's not finding time to do it. So then Prabhupada thinks, I can't do this during the day. The only way he could do it during the day is I have to go somewhere and hide. Not practical. Could do it for a few weeks, but not daily. So Prabhupada's thinking, and then he realizes, or he comes to the conclusion, that the only way I'm going to be able to do this is I have to be able to get up at night after a few hours rest, two or three. Nothing to disturb me, and then I can do this. So Srila Prabhupada prayed to Krishna to help him do that. Now I have a question for you. Have you ever gotten up after two or three hours and gone through the whole day without complaining that you're tired? Think about it. Okay, you might say, maybe I did it once, but think, you know, long trip, can't sleep on the airplane, or this or that. You know what it's like to be really tired, not get enough rest? Oh, I'm tired, Prabhu, I ain't gonna, yeah. So Prabhupada's doing this every night. He's giving up sleep. Anybody like to get up after 2 hours and you're still tired? Not fun. Not fun to get up when you're tired. That's what Prabhupada's doing. He's not getting enough rest so he can get up. And somehow or other, he's completely alert to be able to translate. And then he doesn't rest till about 1:30 or 2. So he stays up the whole day till 2 o'clock on 2 to 3 hours of rest. That was not his normal schedule. When he first came from India, he was not doing that. He was sleeping through the night. He did this so he could translate books. So put yourself in that situation. You have a seva. The only way you can do it is to sleep 2 hours. Would that be difficult? Of course it would be. And there's Prabhupada, never complaining and not getting enough rest. Did you ever hear Prabhupada complain? He hated sleeping. He hated sleeping, yeah. That was, we all hate sleeping, but somehow or other, we can't do 2 hours or three. So I was meditating on this, and I was just, you know, going more into thinking of it practically, how difficult that is to do, and how he did it every day, and he didn't complain, so he could do that seva. So I think this is also maybe sometimes overlooked manifestation of this deep compassion that Prabhupada had, this deep care for the living entities. And you can think of so many examples. And I think if you connect compassion to so many things that Prabhupada did, you'll start to see, oh yes, this is, he's empowered to do this because he's compassion. He's upset in this situation because of his compassion, because this is going to negatively impact people who could become Krishna conscious. So, thank you for listening, and if there's any questions or discussions?
I have a question.
Yes.
It seems like you have repeated two things, or at least that's all I have, that compassion. Prabhupada had tremendous compassion, and it's because what I'm understanding, his inner connection with Nityananda Shakti.
That's one of the
reasons. What about Gaur Krishnadas Babaji? I mean, Jaiva Dharma does not say exactly we need to practice compassion. Jaiva Dharma says that when pure bhakti develops in the heart, then it shows the symptom outside, Daina, Daya, and Manodena. So, Gaur Krishnadas Babaji, he had pure bhakti also, and he even expressed he had a connection with Nityananda Prabhu. Yeah. But when Nandi, king of Murshidabad, he came to invite him, he seems like a, compared to what you said, that extreme compassion, he seems like a, like withdrawing from everything.
Yeah.
So how to understand that? I mean,
yeah. Sometimes neglect is compassion. Also, you know, that's one of the principles of Madhyamatika. Right? Well, he's not Madhyamatika, but you're acting in that sometimes you neglect somebody for their own good. But my understanding is that if a devotee decides to become a Babaji, that's Krishna's inspiration. Right? His compassion is manifested through his bhajan. I had a godbrother who during Kartik was living in Gita Nagari, and he was doing 64 rounds. He was thinking, should I or shouldn't I do this? Because it's not standard that Prabhupada recommended it. He said, but he did it and he felt that it was having a very good effect on the community just to do that. So, you know, it seems externally like he didn't care and he chastised Bhaktisiddhanta for going to Calcutta and preaching and so many things. But, you know, we understand Krishna's guiding him in that way.
Sometimes we see, like Prabhupada says, now you have time to Akshananda Maharaj. Why don't you sit down and chant more? I finished my rounds. No, you can chant more. This is the time. But then Jayapataka Maharaj, today, he was on the Zoom. I was listening. He says, Prabhupada asked, what are you doing? He said, I'm chanting. You didn't finish 16? He said, yes. Now you should go and preach. Don't waste time. So I'm trying to like reconcile in my head. Maybe yeah. It will never get reconciled.
Well,
trying to grasp something.
Yeah, I think it's a greater loss if Jayapataka Maharaj doesn't preach than Akshayananda doesn't preach. With a devotee of that caliber, yeah, you don't want them. It's just like, you know, you probably know that Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta used to encourage Prabhupāda to take Śrīla Maharaj out to preach. And they would go out, Śrīla Maharaj would preach, Prabhupāda would give the talk to collect the donation like that. So I think, you know, that mood is also very good. Some devotees are, they're just capable, they're meant to preach in a particular way. And, you know, Iyendra preached by staying in Vrindavan doing kirtan. So everybody's... you know, but we have an example in Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And, you know, Prabhupada always pushed us to sacrifice our selfish interests. And he always told us that that would help us. And of course, we couldn't be bhajanandas. You know that statement once? Prabhupada said, I'm starting all these big projects for all my big men to be engaged. So because you can't sit down and chant, we have all these big projects. All these, what did Prabhupada say? Grotesque. We have all these grotesque projects because you can't sit down and chant. But then, even if that were not true, I don't think Prabhupada would have us sit down, even if we could. It doesn't seem like he would. He would say no. This is the mission. Sometimes when Prabhupada was pushing book distribution, there was some question, well, is there really benefit? Are people even reading the book? And one time Prabhupada said, we don't even know the result, but all we know is we have the order. And we know if we do this, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta will smile, so we just want to see him smile. So I was just reading the last few days the biography of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, and it's so powerful to read because you see all the little connections between what he was saying and doing and what Prabhupada said and doing. You know, practically verbatim, Prabhupada's saying the same. If you get money, print books, he wasn't so much into temples, and et cetera, et cetera. And like Prabhupada, in his own way, is saying the same thing. And you see he's just carrying the message. There's another thing I wanted to share. A couple of years ago, I was in Mayapur, and Jaya Thakmarj was there, and he was having his Vyas Puja. And there were like 5,000 devotees there, or something like that. So I was sitting there, and I have this very analytical brain. So sometimes I feel, and sometimes I analyze. But you can't really do both, unless you're a woman, I guess. But men do one or the other. So I was analyzing. I said, what's going on here? There's so many people here who have taken shelter of him. Why is he so powerful? Why is he so successful? And I was analyzing. I said, because he cares so much about other people. That's like his bhav. That's like his DNA. That he's just, you know, he cares so much about people becoming Krishna conscious. That's its nature. And then one of his disciples was telling me that when he was doing therapy after his stroke in that area, some people who had an accident, they were waiting to do the therapy. And he told the doctor, he said, let them go first. They need it more than I do. It's just his nature. That's who he is. So it's not the only reason he's successful, but that was my analysis, that when you have this deep level of compassion, it empowers you and it attracts people because people feel that you care. And there's nothing more powerful than people knowing that you care about them. Even in studies, they found that if a doctor or a nurse cares about a patient, the patient's stress level decreases and they heal twice as quickly. And so, you know, so many of us surrender to Prabhupada, and you ask the devotees, why did you surrender? They said, because I felt his compassion. I felt he actually cared. Like, more deeply than anyone ever cared. Even your parents care about you, but but you got to go to college and, you know, do this and that and so forth, be a good son or daughter. So that compassion is powerful. And that's really what Prabhupada pushed. So we can't think that the Bhajanamandis aren't compassionate, but maybe we... It's just the way Krishna reveals to them that's the best seva for them.
So is the care, compassion, is a component to do bhakti, or is it naturally will come as we progress by following the instruction?
Both. But some people are more fortunate than others. They have the samskara. They're less selfish than others. They're born with it. And so, you know, some of us will do bhakti and maybe not have the compassion that a new bhakta has right now. It's possible. We all have our nature. But definitely it will develop. And I think it's possible to increase our compassion if we're just conscious of how much people are suffering. I mean, if you could get into the thought process of every person, you probably would kill yourself. Because you would see so much suffering, you wouldn't be able to handle it, isn't it? If you could actually think what everybody's thinking. So, and we have so many examples of Prabhupada just kind of knowing what people think. So many devotees have told stories. Someone had a question, And he would give the answer to the question without the question being asked, and turn to the person to give the answer. And I'm just like, wow, I didn't even verbalize that question, and Prabhupada gave the answer. And there's so many stories like that. So I think we can understand that Prabhupada could understand that suffering, you know, really the suffering of the jiva. And the more you understand it, even the more you feel it, then the more compassion is drawn out of you. The other thing that's interesting is Prabhupada said people who have suffered are more compassionate. Poor people are more compassionate than wealthy people because they suffer. And it's in the Krishna book, I believe. People who have been through difficulty are because they know that they say, oh, the sadhu comes to the rich man's house, and they get, oh, you need me, you're sadhu, you depend on me, I'm your God. But they go to the poor man's house, immediately they give. I think Prabhupada gives that example, immediately they give. And they've done social experiments where they give food to homeless people, and that homeless person goes out and gives food to all the other homeless people and doesn't keep any for himself. And then they interview him. Well, why did you do that? And he said, these other people are suffering. I said, did you eat today? No. Did you eat yesterday? No. And you gave the food away? Yeah. Because I know what suffering is. So the more you can empathize with people suffering, the more you become compassionate.
Yeah, Krishna glorified Antidevi in Bhagavatam. The technical question may come, I don't know, I should not say. Anybody else has a question?
I actually supposed to be giving another class at 6 o'clock. Okay. And I kind of spaced out today. I didn't know. So there's a virtual Rath Yatra in Argentina I'm supposed to give class for right now. So I'm going to see if I can get it here. If I can get it here, that'll be better. Otherwise, I'll go home. But I'd like to talk about this more. But I mean, you can continue without me. Maybe I'll do two classes at one time. If I get internet here, I don't know.
Mine's not actually a question, it's a comment.
Yeah.
I remember hearing when Srila Prabhupada was in Honolulu and he was taking a little rest in the afternoon. Outside, one of the devotees was mowing the lawn. And Srila Prabhupada asked his servant to tell him to stop because I can't sleep when I hear them screaming. It was the blades of grass he was concerned about.
Oh my God. What a story. And Prabhupada, when he was in John Ratton's estate and they were leaving, and chant Hare Krishna at the roots of every tree. Yeah. Amazing. Well, I can't get connected here. So. You can continue the class. I would be honored, but scheduling difficulty.
No, I'm just, because in Madhurya Kadambini, technically it says, bhakti doesn't come from a bhakta, but through bhakta. There's a big difference from and through. Bhakti only comes from bhakti. So when bhakti enters in the heart, so I'm putting bhakti in the Prabhupada's heart, and naturally it produces this result, byproduct, humility, then daya or compassion to others, and respecting others according to their respective position. Which Prabhupada was a perfect emblem, I'm not saying. But then question comes that in this case, it is the product of the bhakti. But then we see that also many exalted personality in our parampara, then we don't see that kind of three result in their preaching life. How to understand life?
Hare Krishna, thanks to the class, Guru. Someone said that they asked, about Gopeshwar Das Babaji, why he was in the parampara. He wasn't a ghosty Anandi, he was a Bhajan Anandi. And so Prabhupada said that
his renunciation was his preaching. So he was preaching by showing an example of being totally renounced. And therefore, you know, he attracted Vaisya's attention.